Good evening and welcome to this special holiday weekend edition of the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 3rd, 2017. On today's show, we have University of Idaho Associate Law Professor Benjamin Cover with part one of his talk on gerrymandering. Benjamin Cover teaches a UI Law School course on legislation and the political process. He spoke to the Moscow League of Women Voters Wednesday noontime meeting on March 22nd. On tomorrow's special holiday edition of the Evening Report at 5:30 p.m., we'll have part two of Professor Benjamin Cover's talk. We begin with Professor Cover explaining how political district maps are drawn and various ways they can be drawn to help political parties, in this case, arbitrarily labeled the green and red parties.
So election law scholars, they like catchphrases, and they use the terms packing and cracking. And so this is how, what we do is we pack all of the Green Party into one district, and then we'll make nine other districts here. Okay, so now here's what happened historically. It wasn't really a square, and they didn't even have to do it on purpose. Here's what happened. Start in 1901, right? And you just give every county gets one seat, right? And then you start having urbanization. And what happens is naturally over time, the rural areas get less and less populated, and the big cities get more and more populated, right? But don't update the maps, never change it. That's what was called the malapportionment crisis. So what was happening, should I try to go back to my PowerPoint or just forget about it? So what was happening was naturally more and more people were kind of naturally packing themselves into cities, but those cities were not getting any more representation, right? And there might be correlations between urban versus rural and maybe party and race, right? And so people in the cities started saying, hey, there's a lot of us here in the cities, but we only seem to be getting one out of the 10 districts, or we only seem to be getting a very small representation. Maybe we should stop just drawing it based on what the old world counties were, and we should draw it so that there's roughly the same number of people, right? Now, there's a powerful argument for why that's the way democracy should work, right? It doesn't, there's something funny about having all of those green voters in just one district, right? And by the way, if we did that, so if we do this packing strategy, and there's 10, right? So imagine I do 9 of these here, right? How many districts does Party A get out of the 10? Yeah. And so they get 90% seat share with only 45%. And Party B gets only 10% of the representation, right? And if you got 10% representation on in a legislature, you have no power at all. You know, that 90% majority, veto-proof, filibuster-proof, you run the legislative agenda, right? But this means that a numeric minority runs the legislative agenda, right? Now what can we do about it? Let's zoom out for a second. What can we do about it, right? This is a natural function of districting. As soon as you start drawing districts like this, you can manipulate it. And whoever gets to draw the lines has amazing power, awesome power. Awesome in the sense that it can be abused, right? Traditionally, it was the legislature itself that had that power. And do you trust the politicians in the legislature to not abuse that power? But then what do we do, right? And so there's a couple things we can do, right? In general, if there's a problem in America, we can handle it at the federal level or at the state level. We can have politicians handle it, or we could have judges handle it. And we could have elected representatives handle it, or we can use direct democracy and have referendums on stuff, right? Those are the main options we have available to solve big political problems, right? A lot of people are worried that this is a really big problem and politicians aren't going to fix it. So that leaves the courts and the people. Now, there's a couple things that we can do, and there's a couple things that people have tried to do. People, through ballot measures, have tried to take away districting power from legislatures and give it to independent districting commissions, right? That's what Idaho now does. Except Idaho is one of the few states in the country where the legislature just did that on its own. It was actually the legislature that agreed to do that. Hmm. Why did the Idaho legislature agree to do it? Yeah, well, so the way the commission's set up, there's six members, three appointed by Democrats, three appointed by Republicans. And it's like the majority leader, the minority leader, and the House and the Senate. But you need four of them to agree to a map, right? And when I taught election law, I had one of the commissioners come and talk to our students about it, and they explained how difficult it is to try to do that, right? You got three Democratic appointees, three Republican appointees, and then you got to try to draw a map, right? Mm-hmm. And for Idaho, you got 44 counties in Idaho, right? And people would like to keep counties together if possible. It's really hard to do it. And the commissioner that we had, Julie Kane, she's the managing attorney for the Nez Perce tribe. She was appointed to serve on this commission. And she served on this commission, and she and her colleagues on the commission tried really hard. They couldn't figure it out. They had a 3-3 vote. They couldn't agree. And they had to appoint a new commission. But politicians are appointing people to the commissions, right? California has recently adopted an independent redistricting commission. I think it's interesting because it's not bipartisan in that Republicans appoint some members and Democrats appoint others. It's just nonpartisan. And so there's a process for selecting members that's designed to try to have members who really are independent. But if you give anybody this power, aren't you worried that they might have an incentive to go one way or the other? Mm-hmm. Arizona has an independent redistricting commission. They don't have six, so they don't have the 3-3 vote problem. They have five. Mm-hmm. Two appointed by Republicans, two appointed by Democrats, and then one is supposed to be the independent. Mm-hmm. And you know what happens there? The two Republicans want one plan, the two Democrats want one plan, and the person in the middle has a really tough time. And what they did is they voted with the Democrats. So that's one strategy. That strategy is for the people to take districting power away from the legislature and transfer it to some independent commission. And I think that's been one of the primary responses. It makes a lot of sense. I'm not trying to, I don't mean to impugn people who are supporting that. I think that's a significant reform. It might be an improvement. I do want to suggest it might not be a silver bullet, because those commissions, you know, those are people too. They might be manipulable too, right? Also, it's hard to actually set up a commission and have it work and have it function properly, right? In Arizona, the legislature is refusing to fund the commission. Now what do you do? The governor wants to fire somebody from the commission. Now what do you do, right? All of these fights are happening in Arizona. And this only works if you have a state that has direct democracy. Not every state does, right? Now, another thing you can do is use direct democracy and just get rid of districting entirely and say, let's use proportional representation, like is used in some countries in Europe and other parts of the world, where we stop drawing any districts at all and we just have one big election. And if it's 55% support one party and 45% support the other party, then that's what will happen in the legislature, right? That's worthy of consideration, and I think that people who are arguing for that, I think they have good reasons to argue for that. It's been most popular at the local level, so increasingly there are cities that choose their city council in that way, or choose their school board in that way. So like Cambridge, Massachusetts is starting to do that. And there's actually several dozen local governments that are starting to adopt proportional representation systems. Now, proportional representation is not perfect either. Can anyone see any problems with the proportional representation? So, can you flesh it out for us and unpack it for us?
If you've got a state that has just two large cities in it,
then they're going to dominate everything.
And then the rest is, Arizona has Phoenix and Tucson.
Right. basically, we might be worried that there'll be no representation for minorities. And when I say minority, I don't just mean a racial minority, but a political minority, a rural versus urban minority, right? This is the same problem the founders were struggling with when they were setting up Congress, right? Should it just be proportional? Should it be based on people? Or should it be protecting, you know, the individual interests of distinct subgroups? You know what they did? They split the baby. They made Congress have House and Senate, right? And, you know, the reason Idaho gets two senators, just like California. That is not proportional, right? And some people say we should stop doing that. Let's get rid of the Senate. The Senate is inconsistent with the democratic norm of just proportionality, right? So is the Electoral College. Because the Electoral College, the number of electoral votes that your state gets, is equal to the number of representatives and senators, right? Mm-hmm. So Idaho gets two senators. California gets two senators, right? Now, California has more representatives because that's based on population. So some say, and there's good reasons to argue for it, get rid of the Electoral College, get rid of the Senate, just have everything just determined by majority rules, right? Right, and the arguments against, exactly, right? And the arguments against that are, what about a small state like Idaho, right? There's other arguments against it too. There's other problems with proportional representation. If you go to some countries in Europe that have proportional representation, there's some benefits, but there's some drawbacks too. They don't just have two parties. When you stop drawing districts and have winner-take-all elections, you start having incentives to start having more than two parties. And so some European countries have three, or five, or 11, right? And you might get a small party that represents the narrow interests of certain groups, a neo-Nazi party, the Communist Party, right? And then they each have one or two legislators in the legislature, and then it makes it harder to govern, right? And you have all these governing coalitions. The Israeli democracy is set up in this way. You have to have agreements between all the parties to have governing coalitions, and then they disagree and the government collapses. They have to do a new election all the time. And what it's basically doing is, instead of us trying to figure everything out within the two main parties, we choose as many parties as we want, and then our parties figure it out in government, right? Another problem, if you don't have districts, you won't have an individual representative. Constituent services, you have a question about how to access a government benefit, or you call your local representative, they live nearby, they can drive, you know, you can go visit their office. If we just have one big election for everything, who will your representative be, right? Okay, so that's the idea of just getting rid of districting power. And it would completely solve gerrymandering. There would not be any more gerrymandering, but there might be some other problems too, right? So then here's the final idea. Okay, let's keep drawing districts, but let's have the courts get involved and stop the map maker from drawing gerrymandered districts, right? And that's what people have been asking the court to do. They asked the court to do it 50 years ago, and they said, adopt one person, one vote, require that these districts have the same number of people. And the court agreed to do that. They've also, there's some rules saying make it against the law to draw these districts in certain ways that discriminate on the basis of race. And the court's been willing to get involved in that area as well. But so far, the court has not been willing to get involved when the claim is just, look, there's the same number of districts. We're not discriminating in terms of race, but we are discriminating in terms of party. Mm-hmm. One party is just discriminating against the other. That's what's called political gerrymandering. And the court just keeps dividing over and over and over about whether to get involved with that. And there's two issues for the court. One is they're trying to figure out what's the right legal standard. And the second question is, if they can't figure out a good legal standard, is it appropriate for the courts to be getting involved at all? The courts are worried about playing too much of a role in drawing the maps, right? We don't like the map makers. Whoever draws the maps, we get mad at them, right? So if the Supreme Court starts drawing all the maps, we're going to be mad at the court, right? And it's going to be on the court to make sure that the maps are fair, right? 17 years ago, the court decided the 2000 presidential election. If you look at the legitimacy of the court, public polling, my PowerPoint's messed up, but if you look at public polling, after Bush v. Gore, the court took a really big hit, in terms of its legitimacy. And for a long time, the court's been considered the most, it's been held in the highest esteem. You ask people, what do you think about Congress, right? What do you think about the court? Pretty respected, right? After Bush v. Gore, the court took a big hit because people started viewing the court as it's kind of a political body. We see this happening right now as President Trump has nominated Judge Gorsuch, and everybody's worried that he's not gonna be a judge. He's gonna be a Republican, right? And so the more that we get courts involved, the more that we threaten the institution of the courts and the idea that courts are not politics, they're something else, right? And so what we need is a very clear legal standard where the court could say, this comes directly from the Constitution. We're not making this up. This is what the Constitution requires. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard because when you read the Constitution, it doesn't say anything about electoral districting one way or the other. It doesn't tell us what the relationship between seat chair and vote share should be. It has broad principles, equal protection. Each state is guaranteed a Republican form of government. First Amendment guarantees freedom of speech and other related freedoms. But what the court has to do is take those broad principles and turn it into a clear legal test. And so that's where we are today. I will try to get my PowerPoint up. Here's somebody who thought the solution was proportional representation and then changed their minds. Here's Idaho. How should we draw these lines, right? Here are some relevant constitutional provisions. So we've got the First Amendment, we have equal protection, but we also have established an independent judiciary. This is hard to see, but that's a salamander again. This is malapportionment, right? And this is the first time that the court started intervening and the U.S. Supreme Court started telling every state in the country how to draw their maps. Not exactly how to draw them, but putting a limit on how to draw them, right? And the limit they said is you can't do this anymore. You can't have these extreme differences in the size of the districts in terms of population. Mm-hmm. The court struggled with that for decades. People kept invoking the guarantee clause of the Constitution. Do you know what the guarantee clause is? Mm-hmm. It's in Article 1, Section 4, and it says the United States shall guarantee to each state a Republican form of government. And those green voters that were all being packed into one district, they said this is not a Republican form of government. When you have a minority controlling everything, it's just not a Republican form of government. And so this violates the guarantee clause. And the court kept saying over and over again, that's not for us to decide. It is a political question. It is not a judicial question. They said it's a non-justiciable political question, which means it's so hard to figure out what the right answer is, it's inappropriate for the courts to try. That's what they did throughout, between 1901, as urbanization started and the malapportionment challenges started, and the 60s, the court just kept rejecting these challenges, not saying you're wrong, not saying these maps are okay, just saying it's not our job to fix it, it's not our proper role, it's not clear enough for us to have a legal test, right? And this is Justice Frankfurter, and he has this famous line, courts ought not to enter this political thicket. Courts should not get involved, right? And so it's tough, because we kind of want the courts to get involved, because we don't trust politicians to fix this. But the courts don't want to get involved, because it's a political thicket, right? Even Justice Frankfurter was willing to get involved in this case. This is the Tuskegee, Alabama gerrymander. Just when African Americans were starting to register to vote in Tuskegee, they changed the boundaries of the city. It used to be a square, literally a square, just like I drew for you. They changed it into a 28-sided figure like this. And if you look at it, all the white families in Tuskegee still lived in Tuskegee, but somehow all of the black families no longer lived in Tuskegee after this.
Who drew?
The state of Alabama. And then a man named Gomillion sued and said this violates the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. And it violates the 15th Amendment, which prohibits discrimination in voting on the basis of race. And even Justice Frankfurter, who didn't want to enter the political thicket in general, said, okay, that's going too far. That the courts can stop.
What year was this?
So Gomillion was, this is, so this was before one person, one vote. So Gomillion versus Lightfoot. This is like in the late 40s, early 50s. I'd have to check the exact date of it.
Didn't this just happen in North Carolina like last year?
Yes. So in North Carolina, it wasn't drawing the lines differently. It was changing who was allowed to vote. So voter ID, you have to have certain voter IDs. Where the polling places are going to be, whether you're, you know, whether there's going to be early voting, whether there's going to be all those rules about who can vote, right? And we have our chief election officer from Latah County here who has to enforce the rules in Idaho. And she can tell you how important that is in affecting whether people are able to meaningfully cast a ballot or not. What they did in North Carolina is the legislature literally asked their staff, tell us how people vote and break it down for us by race. And then they looked at all the ways that, and these are the findings of the court. They looked at all the types of voter ID that African Americans disproportionately use and said, let's not make, those are not available. What are the ones that white people use? Those are available. And the court found that with surgical precision, that's the line, right? With surgical precision, they were trying to make it harder for, specifically for African Americans to vote. Now, North Carolina said, look, we are not trying to make it harder for African Americans to vote. We're trying to make it harder for Democrats to vote. That's what they said. They said this is about politics. It's not about race, right? Because the way the court has interpreted the Constitution, if it's about race, court's going to give a really hard look. If it's just politics, the court's not going to worry about it. And it's really hard because we have a phenomenon in this country that is called conjoined polarization, like Siamese twins, where party and race are very, very closely correlated. They're also correlated with geography. And so people tend to cluster and live next to and have neighbors who tend to be similar to them in terms of both race and party, right? And that's the sort of clustering we need in order to gerrymander, right? But the North Carolina case you're talking about was about who can vote. But there's another North Carolina case, which I'm going to get to in 1 minute, okay? And I'm going to come right back to you. Because, so I think this is 1948, but don't quote me on that because I might be wrong. Just Google it, okay? It's Gomillion versus Lightfoot, right? And Gomillion was, he was kind of a cool guy. He was organizing African Americans to register in Tuskegee, right? And one of the rules they had is if you want to register to vote, you need to get a letter of reference from two other people who are already registered to vote. So you know what Gomillion did? And Gomillion was like a professor at the university, an African-American professor at the university. He had people working on his house doing like construction work. He said, I'm not paying you until you do a letter of reference so that I can register to vote. And he got his plumber to sign for him, and he got somebody else to sign for him. He started registering to vote. Then Alabama did this. And then Justice Frankfurter said that's going too far. But it was about race, not about politics. And Justice Frankfurter said, we're deciding this on the basis of the 15th Amendment, which deals only with race. We're not deciding this in a way that's going to get the courts involved in politics, right? We should not enter the political thicket. But eventually the court, Justice Frankfurter kind of lost the battle within the court. And the court decided, so Baker versus Carr is 1962. That's the court deciding that malapportionment, having a ton of people in one district and a very small number in another district, the courts can get involved in that. 1964 is Reynolds versus Sims, which establishes the one person, one vote standard. And what that did is it limited the ability of mapmakers to pack voters into one district, right? Because now each district has to be roughly the same size. So we can no longer manipulate the size of districts anymore. But what we can do is manipulate their shape, right? And so what we need now is a rule, a legal test, saying stop manipulating the shape of districts. Yeah?
You mean size as an area or population?
Population size. And when you look at a map, you might see districts that are huge in geographic size because they're sparsely populated. And then a tiny district because it's a city that's very densely populated, right? But in terms of population size, it's going to be roughly the same number of people, right? So now, if you want to manipulate things, you got to manipulate shape on the basis of political affiliation. That's political gerrymandering. And the court is struggling with political gerrymandering the same way it was dealing with malapportionment. So for size, you know, the response of the court was, we're not going to get involved, can't figure it out, we're not going to get involved, can't figure it out. Okay, fine, one person, one vote. For political gerrymandering, manipulating the shape of districts on the basis of political affiliation, not race, right? The court has had the exact same dynamic where it says we can't get involved, we can't get involved. So there's been, the court's addressed this three times, and each time the court is deeply divided in very splintered, fractured opinions that are really complicated. But they're basically disagreeing about two things. There's two questions. One, can the courts get involved? And two, if so, what's the legal test going to be? And they're disagreeing on both of those questions. And here's the way it works. Davis versus Vandemer, can the courts get involved? Six of the justices say yes, they can. The other three say no, they can't, there's no legal test. But the majority said, no, political gerrymandering, that's something the courts can handle. And we're going to apply a legal test. But those six justices couldn't agree on the legal test. And so when you read the opinion, it's kind of funny. More conservative justices, Rehnquist, Berger, O'Connor, there is no test. Court shouldn't get involved. These six justices, no, the court should get involved, and there is a test. What's the test? Well, Justice White had one test, and then Justice Powell had another test. And there weren't five votes for a test. Okay, so people tried for 18 years to bring these claims, and every single one failed. Nobody knew what the test was. The test was too hard. It didn't work. Veith versus Dubilier, this is 2004. The court splits 5-4 on the question of whether the courts can get involved. The four most conservative justices, O'Connor, Rehnquist, Scalia, and Thomas, say courts can't get involved. There's no clear legal test. These four liberal justices, Stevens, Ginsburg, Souter, Breyer, they say no, the courts can get involved. There is a legal test. In fact, we have three different ideas of what the legal test should be. And they have proposed three different legal tests. And then Justice Kennedy, the swing vote, said, I don't like any of these tests. I don't think they work. But maybe we can come up with a new test in the future. So keep trying, everybody. That's what he did. And people just kept trying. They tried again, and Lulac versus Perry, same thing. Liberal justices are like, let's do this. Here's a bunch of different tests. Conservatives are like, nope, too complicated, can't get involved. Justice Kennedy's like, I think maybe we're getting closer, I don't know, but we're not there yet. It's been 30 years that the court's been doing this, disagreeing about whether, and if so, how to intervene. And for the first time in 30 years, a court has recognized a political gerrymander. Justice Kennedy is a swing vote. He's still going to be the swing vote because, you know, if we have Justice Gorsuch replacing Justice Scalia, they'll vote the same way. It's the same balance on the court, right? But we now have, people are working really, really hard on trying to come up with a standard. And they know what Justice Kennedy's looking for, because he keeps handing back the homework assignment and saying, do it again and try this or try that, right? And so they're trying to do exactly what he's looking for.
You've been listening to University of Idaho Associate Law Professor Benjamin Cover with part one of his talk on gerrymandering, recorded March 22nd at the Moscow League of Women Voters meeting at the 1912 Center in Moscow. Benjamin Cover teaches a University of Idaho Law School course on legislation and the political process. On tomorrow's special holiday edition of the KRFP Evening Report at 5:30 p.m., we'll have part two of Professor Benjamin Cover's talk. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP and donate to our Full Power campaign for a limited time only. You can donate $10 and have it matched from a generous anonymous donor for another $34, bringing your donation to $44 for a Full Power campaign that won't be going on much longer. You can call 208-892-9300 or donate on the KRFP website. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great holiday weekend.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
And the weather for the Moscow Pullman area, patchy smoke tonight. Otherwise clear, low 52. Patchy smoke tomorrow before noon, sunny high 89. Mostly clear Tuesday night and Wednesday, low 58, high 92. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 63. And mostly clear skies Thursday through Saturday with a high of 96 Thursday and Friday. And Saturday as well, and lows 64 Thursday night, 62 Friday night.